think back to what the facility landscape was 20, 25 years ago, you didn't have these behemoth organizations. And why that's important to understand is because we now have the same thing happening on the payer side. So if you think back 20 years ago, there were 15 or more insurance, major insurance carriers. So what you've seen is this consolidation of power on both the facility side and on the insurance side. So today we have, you know, four major payers, commercial payers. And in any given marketplace, you have just, you know, generally one or two dominant hospital systems. And so what you end up with is a lot of power in very few hands. And with add on top of that, lack of transparency of pricing or quality, add on top of that, those facilities now own, they're vertically integrated, primary care, specialty, imaging, outpatient surgery. They've become their own ecosystems. There's just not much competition. And when there's not much competition for paying or provision of care, it just creates inefficiency.
That is Chris Hamilton. He is a partner with Hotchkiss Insurance in Texas, where he leads the employee benefits practice within the firm. His focus is helping his clients fix systemic issues to both health insurance structuring and healthcare purchasing, plaguing their companies. Join me as he talks about health insurance here in the U.S., employee benefits, and price transparency. Welcome to the Insightful Nurse Leader. This is a podcast by nurse leaders for nurse leaders. This show is focused on assisting leaders become effective managers and change facilitators. I'm your host, Miles Perilla. Join me every week as I speak with fellow nurse leaders, share insights, lessons learned, and practical advice. So, whether you're a seasoned frontline leader, a budding charge nurse, an experienced manager, or executive, you don't want to miss this. Hello and welcome everyone to our 14th episode of the Insightful Nurse Leader. Today we have a very interesting guest. He is not necessarily a nurse, but has a huge presence in healthcare in general. And Chris Hamilton, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Awesome. Welcome. So Chris, you're in the health insurance side of things in healthcare. Can you share a little bit more about your background and your expertise?
Sure. Absolutely. So my background is actually in finance. I don't really know anybody that's gotten into the insurance business, you know, straight out of school, just looking to get into this industry. But my background was in corporate finance and corporate banking. And I became interested in healthcare as the Affordable Care Act was being passed. And my interest in it was really from a compliance standpoint from my corporate clients, because they were subject to very substantial financial penalties if they weren't compliant. So I just began asking CFOs and business owners, are you compliant with the law? Because we needed to know from a financial impact standpoint. And I was really surprised by a lot of the answers that I received. Most of them were shoulder shrugs or we're not sure. And they delegated that to somebody else in their organization, which I totally understand. But as I'm looking at their financial statements, I'm looking at this one line item, healthcare or health insurance. And I notice over 3 to 5 years that costs continue to go up almost every single year, anywhere between 8 to 15%. So my follow-up question to those owners and CFOs were, this looks like it's growing pretty rapidly. It's one of the most expensive things on your P&L, your profit and loss statement, so their income statement. In fact, it was usually one of the, either the second most expensive thing or the third most expensive thing on their income statement. How do you manage that cost? And I was just really surprised at the responses I got there. It was, you can't really control the cost. It's whatever brokers and the insurance companies tell us the cost is going to be. And the reason that was interesting to me in many of these cases is many of these clients were really sophisticated. They had very sophisticated ways of managing their cost of goods, their labor force, everything, every input in their business. I just thought it was interesting that one of the most expensive things in their business, they just turned over to somebody else and thought there was no way to control it. So that began my interest in learning about how healthcare works in America and how we pay for it. And that's kind of what led me down this rabbit hole to where I am today. I'd worked with a very large brokerage, learned the business from them on how they monetize clients and how the insurance companies work with brokerages and just a lot of the behind the scenes secrets. And ultimately what led me into the insurance business was my thought was, if there's somebody that could figure out how to design healthcare buying and healthcare finance kind of marry the best of those two philosophies, somebody could really create a good business that could do good in our economy. And that was really my focus when I got into the business.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. For those of you wondering, might ask, why are we talking about finance in a nurse leader podcast? And to me, it's really both fascinating and interesting and relevant because, as we all know, the biggest cost expenditure in any healthcare operations, health system, what have you, is labor cost. And a big part of that is the benefits package. And with a big change and shift in labor workforce right now is trying to get more nurses back to the workforce. And a big part of the value proposition for employers is a benefit package. So, Chris, from your perspective, with your studies and learning in healthcare in America, what is the biggest gap right now from the coverage side of things for benefits?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I would back up even a layer above that. And I would just, you know, challenge all of your listeners to think about how they buy anything in their day-to-day life, mm-hmm. whether it be a gallon of milk, a gallon of gas, whether it's a new smartphone or a television. People have the ability to know what the cost of something is before they buy it. So if I tried to sell you a gallon of gas for $10, even in today's marketplace, you might look at me and say, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, you can buy it for the very low price of $5 today, right? It doesn't work that way in healthcare. Every day, people will walk in and they will buy a medication. They will have a procedure done in a facility that might cost as much as a car or a house, and in some cases, as much as a mansion. And they never understand what the true cost of that procedure and treatment is. They're never really told what it is when they ask. They're simply told what insurance do you have, it's your deductible and out of pocket. And they don't understand the true quality of what they're buying. And I contrast that with everything else people buy. You can go to Amazon and read thousands of reviews for a product. You understand what you're buying. You have multiple points of distribution. You can get it online. You can get it in a physical store. You can choose from buyers. You can read reviews. You can go into a purchasing situation in just about any other industry with a full set of information, fully understanding what you're getting and what you're going to pay. It doesn't work that way in healthcare. And I think that's one of the reasons why costs continue to escalate in our industry.
Thank you for sharing that. So to me, you're talking about price transparency and transparency with all of the key performance indicators in that regard. Do you think there is a huge opportunity on that with our current health system?
I absolutely do. Whenever you give people the opportunity to make good decisions and you make the information easily accessible to them, and then more importantly, you reward them, they're going to become better consumers of healthcare. And that's been consumerism in healthcare has been a big buzzword for a very long time. And it hasn't quite worked because at the end of the day, if somebody's going to have a major procedure done, it's going to cost the deductible. What incentive do they have? Mm-hmm. Right. So I think not only are we talking about being able to create transparency for consumers, we need to create transparency for all of the parties involved in the transaction. And I'm talking about the payers. I'm talking about the providers, the facilities. It needs to be fully transparent of how everybody makes money. You know, people talk about how there's competition in our industry, but there's really not. And when you go into a major metro area, I will pick on Houston for a second. You can name the top hospital in that market space, right? Mm-hmm. There's a number of hospitals there, but the dominant player is Memorial Hermann. When you go into Dallas, it's Baylor Scott & White. When you go into Fort Worth, it's Texas Health Resources. Think back to what the facility landscape was 20, 25 years ago. You didn't have these behemoth organizations. And why that's important to understand is because we now have the same thing happening on the payer side. So if you think back 20 years ago, there were 15 or more major insurance carriers. So what you've seen is this consolidation of power on both the facility side and on the insurance side. So today we have, you know, four major payers, commercial payers, Blue Cross, United, Cigna, and Aetna. And in any given marketplace, you have just, you know, generally one or two dominant hospital systems. And so what you end up with is a lot of power in very few hands. And with add on top of that, lack of transparency of pricing or quality, add on top of that, those facilities now own, they're vertically integrated, primary care, specialty, imaging, outpatient surgery, they've become their own ecosystems. There's just not much competition. And when there's not much competition for paying or provision of care, it just creates inefficiency.
Yeah, that's very insightful. You know, you've talked about a very insightful and interesting topic right there. From the employee side, what's being advertised to us, for me, myself as a clinician, as a nurse, an employee in that regard in the healthcare space, is that organizations are merging or affiliating, right? Or there is a joint venture, what have you, with the proposal of this is going to lower cost, because you're talking about economies of scale, right? By virtue, you lower in the cost. But again, I think it is lowering the cost from an operation side of the healthcare system, but not necessarily being passed on to the employee side. So what does your firm do differently to be able to address this?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So the number one thing, so I'll back up even just one step. When you think about how brokers typically get paid, because in reality, what I am, how most people would classify us, is insurance brokers. So a client, a commercial entity, a company will hire us to go out and quote unquote, shop the insurance markets and provide them the best cost for insurance. The business has changed so much in the last decade. If I work with a company and I go to four insurance carriers and ask them to provide a quote, I am basically turning over all of the healthcare purchasing to that insurance organization. On top of that, as a broker, traditionally, brokers get paid a percentage of your premium as a company as commission. So I want to pause on that and make a point really quick, is that if, think about this, healthcare is inflationary. It's highly inflationary, or at least the insurance component is. As insurance premiums go up, your traditional broker makes more money. If I get 5% of your premium and you pay $1 million, I get paid $50,000. But if your premium inflates to $2 million, I just doubled my compensation. So it's important to denote that we've shifted away from being paid a percentage of premium as our compensation to just flat fee consulting. So brokerage is one side of what we do. The second thing that we do for our clients is help them manage the supply chain of healthcare. So talking about health insurance is just, how do we pay for healthcare? The actual supply chain healthcare purchasing decisions is how we manage the cost of insurance. So if you think about Blue Cross, United, Cigna, and Aetna, these are for-profit entities that write insurance in our state and nationally, and their profit margins are capped by law at 15% of the premium that they take in. It's actually interesting. If I was an analyst and I was on any of the major news networks, this is what I would be talking about. It's called the medical loss ratio rebate. And any of your listeners can Google that. And essentially what it says in a nutshell is 85 cents of every dollar for large groups. And that means you have over 50 employees insured. 85 cents of every dollar has to go to pay for healthcare services. That leaves, by default, 15% left over for gross profit for these carriers, which was a well-intentioned portion of the law when it was originally passed. Because we didn't want insurance companies taking in all this money in premium and then not paying for our healthcare. We want to force them to pay for our healthcare. But the unintended consequence of that is that they capped the profit margin of a carrier, which is these insurance companies, at 15%. If they make 16%, they have to give that additional 1% back. So they're going to make 15% or less. These are publicly traded entities. Their motive is to maximize value to shareholders, profits. If you think about how they can do that, if their profit margins cap, they need premiums to go up. So to say it another way, would you rather make 15% of $1 million in premium or 15% of $1 trillion in premium? That's why premiums are rising exponentially relative to the cost of actual healthcare. We're allowing people to write checks without oversight. And as it turns out, based on our experience, those insurance companies aren't managing the checkbook the same way you or I would if we were buying healthcare. So one of the things that we do, just kind of in a nutshell, is we actually go out and help companies figure out how to provide the same and even higher levels of healthcare access for lower costs. And by many times, that means we're just cutting out the traditional PPO networks.
How is that going as far as working with that kind of different model?
Yeah. So it's actually very popular. It's becoming popular. Once we expose how the various players in the marketplace are compensated and what their interests are, and really the story that we're telling is, it's really the discussion has to be around healthcare. It's all about healthcare. It's not about health insurance. Health insurance is just the symptom. It's like, think about your, as a nurse, right? You take a patient's temperature and you read the thermometer and it says the patient has a 102 degree fever. Well, the fever that they have isn't the sickness. The fever is a symptom of an illness.
Mm-hmm.
They've got an infection. They've got something going on that we need to drill down to the root cause. So what I would call the fever in health insurance is the rising premiums, the rising cost of health insurance. But the rising cost of health insurance isn't the problem. It's the rising cost of healthcare. And so it's, what do we pay when somebody goes in and has a baby or a hip replacement or you name it, anything that happens inside of a facility or a doctor's office or that's prescribed medication? Showing companies how to manage that better and become better supply chain managers of that healthcare is very popular because rising premiums have gotten to an unsustainable level for most companies. And when you think about where most people get their health insurance, it's through companies. It's employer-sponsored care. And the government limits what companies can charge for that. It's the affordable portion of the Affordable Care Act. There's limits on it. So there are many companies, particularly in the companies that we target, that have reached that threshold. They're no longer able to pass costs on. They no longer are willing to accept 10, 20% increases in a year. They want to figure out, is there a different way? What's the old definition of insanity is doing the same thing, expecting a different result?
Correct.
So we cast a vision for what the future of healthcare can look like for these companies. And we've been doing it long enough that we've got enough success. And the reality is when you pull the parties together, and I'm talking about the payers, the providers, the employers, and everybody can have a conversation around what should this actually cost, you generally are going to get more traction. That's really where we focus.
Going back to the price transparency.
Yeah, price transparency.
So to say, you know, we address supply chain costs and the operations behind that, and as what you had suggested, with that, will employers be able to provide better employee benefits to their prospective employees or that they're attracting top talent?
Absolutely. We have employers that are relatively small employers. Mm-hmm. I have a client that's here in Texas, has about 55 to 60 employees on their health plan. So just in the spectrum of employer sizes, that's very small. And they provide benefits that Fortune 100 companies do not offer.
Wow.
And that was really important to them because they're competing against those very large companies for talent. And when they hired us, we cast this vision for them and they said, look, we just don't want our benefits package to be a detriment to us in the recruiting process. And my thought process was, we're actually going to make this a betterment. They're going to look at this and it's going to be interesting to them.
That's very nice. Now, switching that to the employee side or those candidates looking for a job, right? A big part of, you know, we call that the great resignation, whatever, great reevaluation, what have you. We see a lot of transition, whether people are going to different roles or different careers, et cetera. But a big part of what people are considering in their next role is a benefit package. What would be your recommendation, or are there any strategies that you can recommend for those individuals, professionals, evaluating a good employee benefit package?
You know, it really, a good employee benefit package really is going to be relative to the individual. And I would imagine the number one thing people look at is cost. What does this cost me? And when I mean cost, I mean, what is it going to cost me every single month from my paycheck? What's my employee cost? Or my cost for my family. So that's the first consideration. The second is going to be, what does it cost for me to use the plan when I need it? So that's going to be copays, if there are any, deductibles, and out-of-pockets. So your listeners, when they're evaluating a benefit plan compared to what they have today, they need to think about, how do I use healthcare? Am I going to the doctor once a month, once a year? What kind of medications do I take? What are those costs? So it's really, it's an independent evaluation, I would say.
And I would imagine it would be the same for those, let's say, going for an entrepreneurial route, Correct.
Yeah. So those that are looking at making a shift and starting their own business, that's actually really, that's one of the, I would say, the detriments of the Affordable Care Act, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is the options available to entrepreneurs today. So small business owners, maybe you're a solo practitioner, you're going out and creating a consulting business. If you think about what's available in the marketplace today, you're really limited to just a couple of options. It's the individual healthcare exchange, right? Obamacare, which is not real popular today because it's narrow networks, HMO, trying to schedule appointments with in-network providers is very long lead times. The benefits are very skinny down, which is how they have addressed the cost. Just limit access to care, control the pathways to healthcare, because it's all about what healthcare costs is what dictates the insurance pricing. So the way they make it less expensive is you just ration care or make it so narrow coverage and providers that they can manage the cost. Mm-hmm. So that's one option. The second option is what are called sharing plans, medical sharing plans. And so they've usually tied to some sort of religious affiliation. So they call the, you know, medical ministry type plans. There are some out there that don't require this religious affiliation. But again, those actually do a pretty decent job of addressing cost. A lot of those use some sort of cash negotiation component with facilities. Because really, at the end of the day, if you look at an insurance plan, the majority of a company's cost of healthcare is in a facility, right? A typical doctor visits, you know, 100 to 200 bucks, maybe 300, but one hospital night is 10 times that. So it's facility care that drives the majority of insurance costs. So those plans do a little bit better job of managing costs. But there's a third component, which I would encourage anybody that's going out on their own to consider, and that's this emergence of what's called direct primary care, or DPC is kind of the acronym in our industry. For whatever reason, in our industry, we love acronyms. It's alphabet soup. So your clinicians listening to this will really understand the model. So think about when a patient goes into a doctor's office today, the fee-for-service model. Mm-hmm. It's almost like taking your car, no offense to anybody, but it's like almost like taking your car into a mechanic. They're only going to be able to bill you for the things that they actually do to you. CPT codes, right?
Correct.
The more CPT codes I can put on here, the more we can bill. And so the incentives are misaligned between the payer, the provider, and the patient. The patient just wants to get their care. The provider wants to figure out how to maximize revenue. And you think about your typical primary care doctor, you know, they may see 40, 50 patients a day. And they've got such a large administrative support staff. They're not really practicing medicine anymore. Yeah, I go into a PCP office and there's waiting room full of people. There's six exam rooms, all are full. And I just hear the doctor knocking on doors, going back and forth. You get 3 to 7 minutes with the doctor. Mm-hmm. And the doctor's going to walk in with a referral to a specialist or a prescription. They're not really practicing traditional healthcare. So what you're seeing is this shift of physicians that want to get out of this fee-for-service model. Mm-hmm. They want to get back to practicing real medicine. And so they will give up that fee-for-service model. They will work on a subscription basis. It's a flat fee per month for unlimited access to these doctors. I call it Netflix for doctors. So if you want to binge watch Netflix, it costs you the same as if you don't watch a single episode in a month. And that's how these doctors work. And their patient panels are a fraction of what they're used to. So if you think a traditional PCP has 4,000 to 5,000 patients on their panel, these docs will have anywhere between 500 and 800. And what it does is allows them to truly develop a relationship with their patients. They can provide individualized healthcare versus epidemiological healthcare, meaning somebody walks in with high cholesterol, we give them a statin versus really drilling into what's going on with this patient. You get that with the DPC. So I really highlight that because I feel you can take a exchange policy or one of these healthcare sharing plans and really increase the value of that benefit by pairing it with a dedicated concierge physician.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Follow-up question. You mentioned subscription plan and you see that a lot, right? Get Amazon buying One Medical and a big part of that is subscription. And you see a lot of retail healthcare popping up right now with a subscription plan model. How is subscription plan payment model differ from a DRG or bundled pricing? Like talk about value-based purchasing, right? Yeah, trying to stay away from fee-for-service. Now we're doing bundle payment. How is that different from bundle payment model, the subscription plan?
So when I think about bundled payment models, I'm typically thinking of surgical bundles. So mostly, let's just use outpatient surgical. So for orthopedics, hip replacements, ACL, shoulders, those sorts of things, those are generally less frequent but more costly, more severe. So the subscription model typically doesn't work for those unless you're doing this on a very, very large population. And then you're kind of, it's basically becoming an insurance product again. But when I think about physician care, this is something that we want, one, open access to, two, ongoing care, not acute care. It can be acute, but we generally want ongoing relationships with these folks. And it really allows a better patient access and better patient experience. We want to remove the financial barrier to care. And when I think about how traditional insurance works, be it a $50 copay to access a physician, I'm going to ration my care. I'm going to wait until the symptoms become unbearable to go get that care. I'm just thinking about the average American versus the way subscription-based care works. It's at the very first symptom, I may ping the doctor to get his feedback on how to treat this. And so when you think about from the provider standpoint, what is his goal? The traditional model is get you in so that I can begin billing, pay for an office visit, and then whatever CPT codes, whatever I do for you in the office. When you look at the subscription model, that doctor's sole motivation is to keep you happy, provide excellent customer service and care, and to keep you healthy and out of their office. So that doctor, this was a trend that we saw long before COVID, those physicians regularly doing virtual consultations, even though they're just around the corner from you, perhaps. So their goal was, what's the most efficient delivery of care for this patient where they are on their cycle?
Got it. Now, is that more in alignment to a PMPM model or a capitated model?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You're paying either per employee, which would be like a PMPM or per member per month, which is capitated. So, whether it's 50 or 100 or 150, depending on the kind of provider that you're working with, you're capitating that payment. You're giving them a guaranteed revenue stream. That's the other benefits of these providers. They're no longer dependent upon patients coming into the office to get paid. Mm-hmm. So they're going to get paid the same, whether they see one patient or 100. So it is a capitated model.
Thank you for clarifying that. So, Chris, can you share your outlook for healthcare in the next 5-10 years here in America?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. And I think it's important for people that deliver care to really understand what's going on in the payment side of the business, because ultimately that's going to dictate how care is delivered. Because let's face it, if a payer isn't going to pay for something, a provider is less likely to provide it. And I would imagine to the community that's listening to this, they probably have scratched their head at what insurance paid or perhaps procedures denied and wondered why. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to understand as a clinician what's happening on the payer side. I see two very distinct futures for healthcare in America. The first is going to be what's been talked about in the last couple election cycles. Bernie Sanders talked about it. Hillary Clinton talked about it. Single payer, Medicare for all. Mm-hmm. And all politics aside, I think a lot of people, no matter whether they're on the right or the left, would agree that the government is probably not the most efficient decision maker for healthcare and the most efficient at spending our taxpayer dollars. I would think that many people, there were some that would disagree with that statement, but I look at the way we spend money today in our government, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Where are we at with GDP right now? It's like 22%.
Yeah. And so healthcare, healthcare is a big business in America. So that's one future for healthcare in America. But the other, which is what I'm really excited about, is what we're participating in, and we're working with advisors around the country to make this happen, is this grassroots uprising, if you will, of employers. Because remember, most of healthcare commercially is paid for by employers, where most people get their health insurance, is employers that are saying no more to the way health insurance has worked in the past. And they're grasping hold of these concepts and employing them to provide more healthcare to their employees. And in many cases, they make healthcare free to their employees and they're paying less money overall. And that's important for a couple of reasons. One, everybody should have access to affordable healthcare. I don't think anybody, the left or the right, that's one thing we can all agree on. Everybody should have access. Healthcare is important to our society. We can differ on how to pay for it, but healthcare, and I'm just talking about the cost of insurance, the way healthcare has been designed in our economy, I want everybody to think about this. Healthcare has extracted so much value out of the American society. I tell everybody, healthcare has stolen the American dream from the middle class. Mm-hmm. And people look at me like I'm silly when I say that, but I want people to think about this for a second. If you look at what the average mid-sized business pays for health insurance, And I want to back up one second. When I say healthcare, I'm not talking about clinicians. I don't think clinicians are out there plucking dollar bills out of people's pockets, right? It's not. I come from a family of nurses and providers. And so it's not that. It's just the way the business side is structured with insurance and whatnot. But if you think about what the average American family pays for family coverage at a mid-sized business, it's $1,500 to $2,000 per month. So a family is going to pay $24,000 for insurance coverage, just for the coverage. Then the average deductible is probably $2,000 to $4,000. So if they get sick, heaven forbid, they're going to pay another $2,000 to $4,000. So now you're looking at upwards of $28,000 for health insurance and access to healthcare. That's money that's no longer going to retirement. It's no longer going to college educations for their children. It's money that's no longer going to new cars or vacations or housing, all sorts of things. That's money that's being shifted into an inefficient model to pay for healthcare. And there is a new way to do this where employees can take that money, a big portion of that that they were spending, and they can use it for what they deem best in their family lives. And so it's providing value back to folks.
Wow. That's very insightful. Well, thank you so much for this time. I really learned a lot from you. So Chris, how can our listeners reach you?
So the two best ways to reach me are going to be LinkedIn. So my LinkedIn handle is just linkedin.com/C Hamilton, just the letter C and the last name Hamilton. And I'm also, my kids give me a hard time, but I'm actually on TikTok. I thought it was just a platform for dancing videos, but there's a wealth of information out there. And what I have found is there's a community of my target audience. And so they can reach me. My handle at TikTok is at chris.hamilton.68.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. To view the complete show notes and all the links mentioned in today's episode, visit milesperillaconsulting.com/podcast. And before you go, make sure you follow or subscribe to this podcast so you can receive the latest episodes as soon as they're released. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Thank you again for joining me. This is your host, Miles Perilla, and you're listening to The Insightful Nurse Leader. I'll see you next time.